Welcome to Fellowship Talks, your weekly connection to the life and ministry of Fellowship Bible Church. It is our desire that this podcast will reinforce your worship on Sundays and encourage you as you live your life for Christ this week. Here are your hosts, Dan Schaefer and Amy Scrivanos.
Welcome back to Fellowship Talks. We are so glad to have you with us today. We're your hosts, Dan Schaefer.
And Amy Scrivanos. We're so excited to be back with you today as we have the opportunity to visit with one of our Rwandan missionary partners, Joel Sengoga. Dan, this is really a special interview for me.
Really? I mean, you say that these are all special to you. So why is this one so special?
You're right. They are all special. I love hearing the unique stories of each of our guests and just what God's teaching them and how he's at work in their lives. But this one's special to me, though, because I love this family. In the fall of 2014, the Sengoga family moved from Rwanda to Little Rock for Joel to be part of our church planting residency through Fellowship Associates. And during that year, they were here. They really just became like family to us.
Mm. Yeah. So for those of you who are listening and don't know about Fellowship Associates, Fellowship Associates was established by our church in 1999 as a church planting residency. And we've brought people from all over the country and even the world here into Little Rock to train them as church planters. And we sent them out to plant churches all over our country and around the world. That's just something that's been a desire of ours and it's been in our DNA from the beginning as a church here at Fellowship.
Mm-hmm. You know, in our missions guidebook that was handed out recently, one of the things I was reading about Fellowship Associates was that in the 18 years since they've been established, they have been a part of planting 93 churches here in the United States and across the world. I just think that's amazing. And from those churches, there have been over 100 more churches planted, including ones like the ones that Joel is planting in Rwanda.
That's so awesome. It sounds like we have a lot to talk about with Joel today. So why don't we just go ahead and get started? Joel, welcome to the podcast.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so glad to have you today.
Yeah. So Joel, why don't you just start us off? For those that don't know you, can you just tell us a little bit about you and about your family?
So I'm Joel Sengoga, as you just said, and I'm married to Annie. We've been married for 14 years now. I've been blessed with four kids, two girls and two boys. We live in Kigali City, which is the capital city of Rwanda. And Rwanda is a very small, landlocked country in the East Africa. It's close to the center of Africa, and we call it the heart of Africa.
That's great. Yeah. So for those of you listening, obviously you can tell that Joel is a national from Rwanda by his accent here. His accent is not like yours and mine, Amy. If you're listening to this podcast at double speed, kind of like I listen to podcasts, you might want to slow this one down just to pay close attention to what Joel has to share with us today. It's so good.
It is so good. You know, I've traveled to Rwanda to visit Joel and his family there. And in Rwanda, they learn British English. They don't learn Southern English. So they would be slowing down to listen to us as well.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's see. So Joel, tell us a little bit more just about you, your journey with Christ, and how you became a pastor.
When I was 19, having started school late and growing up, I was a refugee in Uganda, and 1 year in school, 1 year out of school. So at the age of 19 is when I was finishing my junior high school, and I was in a school break. And that time, I had developed a dislike for Christianity, and generally because of the colonization and thinking, that Christianity and colonialism were just one and the same thing. And I had this funny kind of resentment for Christianity and church, and didn't go to church at that time, and a bit thinking in terms of revolution, being free from imperial influence. That's growing up, I think, because of the suffering as a refugee. I attributed everything that happened to my life to whites and to Christianity, because I didn't tell the difference at the time.
Well, so, you said two things there real quick, Joel, that I just want to ask you to explain a little bit more, because I think for us, we're just not familiar with what that means. So the one thing that you said was that you were a refugee.
Yes.
What do you mean when you were saying that you were a refugee?
So I mean that my parents were Rwandans. They had been living, you know, all the generations in Rwanda, and all of a sudden, because of divisive politics by the colonial administration, the Belgians at the time, the division split the society, and one part of the population was exiled from their country. So we fled to different countries. My parents fled to Uganda, but other families fled to Burundi or Congo, or Kenya or Tanzania. So all over East Africa, our families were spread all over the place. So being born, I was a refugee in Uganda.
Mm-hmm. So this was prior to the genocide in Rwanda in 94. Yes. This is kind of leading up to that, right?
That is leading up to the genocide. Mm-hmm. The same divisions grew into a genocide. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say probably that those who started the divisions wanted to do genocide, but ultimately that's what it ended up becoming. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your family relocated to Uganda to escape as refugees. Mm-hmm.
Well, their houses were burnt down, and they were being hunted to be killed, and my father and my mother fled. I wasn't born yet, but you know, I was born in Uganda.
Okay. So that does a lot to shape your view, your worldview.
Exactly.
And does a lot with what you were saying about hurting your view of Christianity or shaping your view of Christianity. Mm-hmm. So the second thing I wanted to ask you from that is, you saw Christianity as hostile. What changed and what happened in your life how did God get a hold of you?
The version of Christianity that was brought to Africa at that time, which was by the white fathers, a movement by the Roman Catholic Church called Our Lady of Africa, at the time was really like teaching people a foreign culture instead of a relationship with Jesus Christ. So it was about the way you spoke, the way you behaved, changing your way of living. It was more cultural. It's, in short, now looking at it, it's relationship versus religion. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, for instance, when I was young, my parents took me to the church and wrapped up, you know, as a baby, you know, sprinkled some water on my head and gave me a Western name and told me, by so doing, I've become a Christian. Mm. It didn't require any mental consent. It didn't require any personal belief. I didn't understand what I was getting into. Besides being young, I really had no participation. So that's the form of Christianity that explains even my missional context now, because it stayed that way until 1994.
And so tell us how then Christ changed your heart.
So during this was the long vacation after my junior high school. You know, you can imagine at the age of 19, I was, you know, a big man. I was old. It's just that I had been slowed down in education. And I'm in a house all by myself at night. And I had started all these funny, you know, bad habits like drinking, smoking, you know, partying and running around behind girls and all that. And I was drunk that night, and I was sleepless all throughout the night. In the middle of the night, around 3 a.m., very strangely, you know, I started hearing a voice speak to me. Not so sure if one could hear it if they were in the room or whether it was just meant for me. But I had someone engage me and speaking to me and reminded me a statement I had made a couple of years before that, speaking to a young lady who was Rwandan as well, mm-hmm. going to a high school near mine. And she had tried to share the gospel with me. And I said, to hell with your trash. I don't need it. I don't need God. You know, to hell with your God. Mm-hmm. Made such a mean statement to her, and very, very rude and unkind. And this voice started on that note, asking me, you said you have no need of God. Are you really sure? You are like grass that withers, you know. Mm. till then, I'd never read the Bible, and so I didn't even know that that was a common metaphor used in the Bible, referring humanity to grass that dries. And the voice insisted, you are miserable, you are pitiful, you need God. You are sustained by his hands, and if he let you go, you would be finished. And started reminding me young people that were so close to me. One of them was Robert. Robert was my cousin. He had been kind of enlisted as a mercenary in the army of Uganda because he was Rwandese, but he joined this rebel movement in Uganda. And he had just been killed at a very tender age. He said, "Do you remember Robert? Was he not young as you are? Did he not have goals and ambitions to live for? Where is he now? And do you think you can preserve yourself? If it was your turn, would you hold yourself back?" And said, "You are like Robert. Your life can come to an end just like his did.
Wow.
You need God." And I was trembling. By this time, I started shivering and feeling emotionally charged and feeling like shout out and cry. And I'm beginning to say words that I now would say are repentant. You know, "I'm so sorry, God. I didn't know you were real. Now I do." You know, making those kind of funny pleas. I didn't know how to pray, but I knew how to say sorry at that time because I was feeling that my life was in danger.
Mm.
And from that night, my life changed. In the following morning, I went to see someone I knew, took me to church, and I was prayed for and led to Christ. And from that time, by God's grace, I've stayed the course.
That is an amazing story.
Oh, and your process of discipleship has continued from that day.
Yes.
As you grew in your understanding and your knowledge of who Jesus is.
Yeah. Yeah. From that encounter, I was led to a church, and this pastor discipled me for some time. I've, of course, since then moved on. You know, when the genocide was over in 1994, going back to Rwanda. So it's been a couple of years now, over 30 years.
Mm.
And, you know, I've continued my journey with Christ, and I do not regret the decision I took that night.
So you went from unbeliever to believer. What made you want to be a pastor in Rwanda?
2 years after receiving Jesus into my life, I started sensing a calling on my life. I started feeling like, you know, so passionate to share my faith, my newfound faith, and zealous to tell everybody that I came across, you know, started sharing with my peers and my former girlfriends and all these, you know, people actually started calling me pastor before I even sensed the call on my life because I was very enthusiastic and passionate about sharing my faith. And that conviction started growing, and the time to become a pastor came when I returned to Rwanda. After the devastation of the 1994 Tutsi genocide, it was so devastating. I must confess that for the first year, I actually didn't know how to share my faith again. Having literally found 1 million people dead in the country, and literally this was all over the place. I mean, on the streets, heaps of human remains. Every house, every church, piles of human remains in the churches. Vultures covered the sky of Rwanda. There was no difference between day and night because there was a thick covering on top of the city of Kigali and all over the nation. It took International Red Cross month, literally, to clear the, you know, the human remains and bury them, and it was a terrible exercise. And I struggled with my faith at that time. I had never imagined such a horror in my life. I had never seen two dead bodies in one place, leave alone, you know, heaps in churches and all that. And to be honest, for a whole year, I couldn't share my faith. You know, it was the most trying time in my journey of faith and sharing the gospel. By and by, healing came, and I started sensing a conviction to share now. But what really kind of opened my mind was, that's how humanity can be evil. Mm-hmm. There is the potential in a human being to be so good, and there is the potential to be so evil, and God watches all that. I mean, given us the choice to the will to do good or to choose to do whatever we want. And in some way, I would say God's hands are tied because he has given us the power to choose.
Mm. Yeah, that is just completely overwhelming to me as I think through that, because I have no understanding. I have no picture of what those life experiences could be like. So I really appreciate you sharing that and sharing, just being open and honest with where your life has been and what you've walked through in life. I think a lot of us here in Little Rock or around Arkansas or around this country really don't have a mental image or even understanding of what that could be like.
Yeah, last year, Marty and I led a trip to Rwanda, and one of the things we did on the first day of the trip was to visit the genocide memorial there, and that was really hard. But I'm so glad that Joel had encouraged us to do that, because I do think that that event, although it's been 23 years, is still very much it has impacted that country in so many ways, and it's still, there's so many people living today who have lost loved ones in that, and so to have that understanding helps us really understand the Rwandan people and what they've been through. And I know Joel just has such a heart for the people of Rwanda and seeing healing there, and is just doing an amazing job at that in his church. And Joel, can you tell us a little bit about your ministry now in Rwanda, what that looks like, what your church planting residency, some of the work you're doing there?
So, Amy, that's a very wonderful question, actually. I'm so excited to answer that. See, what I just said explains my missional context. Mm. When the genocide happened in 1994, a census had been conducted 2 years before that, a national census, and 96% of our population was deemed Christian, you know. And the genocide was not committed by a foreign force. It was done by the very people that profess to be Christians. Wow. But as I said earlier, it was just nominal Christianity. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of Christianity that I would claim at the time I was hating Christianity, that I was a Christian, you know. Mm. So it had nothing to do with the relationship with Jesus. It had no vertical approach to it, a relationship with God, and therefore no horizontal aspect to it of relating with one another in ways that would be pleasing to God. So when I went back, after seeing what had happened, this grew my conviction to share the true gospel, having a meaningful relationship with Jesus Christ. And this really explains what I do and why I do it. When the genocide was over, the Roman Catholic political influence on the nation lapsed and came to an end. They could no longer influence the trend of events. So this led to a mushrooming of independent evangelical charismatic churches, all theological persuasions. And as if the past was not bad enough, then came this wave of prosperity gospel. And so the true faith remained an illusion, given the past and given what is happening now. Then I started sensing a call in my heart to share the authentic gospel, the grace of God that transforms humanity. And the independent church now is less than 20 years old. The first Bible with Bible Helps was published in 2012. The only Bible college is not yet accredited. So it's a whole new area. And this is where, other than planting the church, which my wife and I started in our living room in 2005, and we've grown to 7 churches now, and I've started, since I returned from Little Rock, having done the Fellowship Associates residency, I've sensed training pastors that I have a heart for church planting. Mm. Our residency has been going for 2 years now. Just graduated. The first bunch was commissioned in August, and the new cohort is just started. The first intake was 4, the second intake is 3, and I am thinking now I have a strategy to church planting as opposed to how I did it before I came to Fellowship Associates.
Okay.
I was planting, but it was random. I've now realized that it is elusive to think of church planting without a strategy for raising leaders to lead the churches.
Okay. So you and your wife, you pastor a church.
Yes.
And you lead your ministry that called Divine Destiny.
Uh-huh.
And you guys are training other Rwandan nationals uh-huh. to pastor and plant churches all around the country.
So passionate about multiplication. I think I would, instead of having a big auditorium with maybe 10,000 people that come every weekend, I would desire to have maybe four or five people that I invest my life in that will go and multiply what I'm doing.
And now you're partnered with us as a church. We're partnered with you for the sake of the gospel in Rwanda. How did you get connected with Fellowship Associates?
I met Robert Lewis and Bill Parkinson and the team that they led to African New Life. They were teaching in the college, the only college that I talked about. And they were doing a couples seminar, and I was invited into that. And through that connection, I ended up coming. After sharing with them my passion for church planting, they thought it was a good idea for me to come and do a residency, which I came and did.
So you brought your whole family.
Yes, I came with my whole family.
Back to Little Rock. Mm-hmm. Lived here in Little Rock for a year?
Yeah, 1 year, summer 2014 to summer 2015, and this was life-transforming. It was really relocating to a whole new culture. And
yeah, I'll say.
Completely, everything was new. A bit challenging at first. You had to figure out how to live here, work for a driver's license, know how to get around. And, soon the residence started, and I'm doing the residency, and kids are in school, and a totally strange environment. But I had the love of the community. People like Amy, whose kids went to the same school, came around, helped us first weeks, couple weeks, taking kids to school before we could be able to drive, and taking our kids to games. And, how it's amazing how you can cross oceans, fly for thousands of miles and then find family. It's amazing what Christ has done for us.
Mm, yeah, we're very thankful for that too. So, Joel, tell us, what does it mean for you for Fellowship to support what you're doing in Rwanda? Now that you've been here, you've established relationships, that ongoing support from Fellowship, tell us a little bit about what that means for you.
Because of the missional context, the kind of missionaries we received and the missional context in which I happen to be doing ministry, I really think the best way to do missionary work is to empower the locals to do to do the job and not let them be dependent. Because when the genocide started, every foreign national was evacuated. And when we needed godly people, godly leaders in the country, is when they were not there, because everybody had to flee for their lives. If I was not Rwandan, I wouldn't be doing ministry in Rwanda. There is this bond that God does when he apportions every nation and every tribe in the confinements that he does. I think that too is intentional, and I am so proud Fellowship thinks that's the best way to do ministry, to support the gospel world over by empowering nationals to do the job. Mm-hmm. I appreciate trainings, short-time mission trips, or even longer-time mission trips, but with a goal to build, equip, and let people be on their own. So...
Yeah, and we have
so grateful.
We have a few mission trips headed towards Rwanda in this next year. One of them, Amy, you're leading.
I am. I can't wait to go back.
Going out next summer to spend some time with Joel and his ministry there with the church planters in Rwanda. Joel, tell us a story about what God's been doing, something God's been doing through the ministry there in Tagale.
I have millions of stories, I think. I'll share two quickly. One, One of is a girl, a young girl that survived the genocide. Her name is Chantal. Emmy knows Chantal.
We love Chantal.
She and her sister survived the genocide in the entire family, and you know, struggling with life, she was taken advantage of, and you know, some guy made him pregnant and didn't want to marry her. And when she came to our church, she was struggling, and Annie brought her in, started teaching her how to cook, and soon when the residency started, the cooking skills that she had learned through Annie and her job, she now cooks for the residents. She's found a job. The church is sponsoring her kid to go to school, and her life is totally changed. She has a hope and the future to look to. And compared to the desperacy when I first met her, you know, how people will come to a pastor and share their brokenness. And when I first listened to her story and then introduced her to my wife to do that, to train her with life skills, she was hopeless. But now her life beams with joy. Her son is growing and in school, and she has a salary at the end of the month and can make provide for his family and give herself what she needs. And her life has really been changed. Mm. Above all, she has found faith in Christ. Mm. Another story which is quick is how I watch leaders be transformed to lead to, you know, the multiplication effect that I was talking about. Jimmy Muyango just been commissioned in August after our first residence.
Okay.
And is now giving back his coaching some now in the new residence. So it's what it, you know, you see a dream and then the dream becomes a life you live, and it becomes so exciting. I think my ministry has never been to a place that I feel fulfillment and joy like I'm seeing now.
Mm. Yeah. You know, even during this conversation, one of the things that I'm just thinking about is that God's dreams, his vision for us is so much bigger than we can imagine. If we would just let ourselves be led by him, if we'll just give him control and let him lead our lives, his vision is so much bigger than what we can see.
Right.
So we've really enjoyed having you with us today, Joel. Last question for you. As a church, as fellowship here, we partner with you as a church, but what can a family do? How does your ministry impact one family just locally here through Fellowship Bible Church? And what can that family do to support you or to be a part of what God is doing?
Well, first of all, a body is, it's individuals gathered together, learning together for a cause. And, you know, one of the things that Fellowship Bible Church is doing that is amazing and life-transforming is the education that they're doing by sponsoring a child to go to school, for instance. Mm. I mean, the only way to really break the vicious cycle of poverty in Rwanda and in Africa generally is to transform children of poor people who go to public schools, which public schools have no qualified teachers, you know, and that means they will come back and live the same lives as their parents lived. But when a child is sponsored, it means they go to a better school and higher chances of breaking through academically, and they will never live a life that their parents lived again. I mean, you cannot change the world, but you can change the world of one person. Mm. Yeah.
So sponsoring children through like Africa New Life, mm-hmm. that program, Fellowship Church, Bible Church, I would love to just encourage you to pray for the Sengoga family. As you listen to this podcast, pray for them. As you think about them through the week, pray for them. And send Joel an email just letting him know that you're praying for him, that you're with him in ministry, even from here in Central Arkansas.
Thank you.
No. You can also, if you would like to support Joel's ministry directly, you can give, even through our offering, you can write a check and in the memo line write Joel Sengoga, or you can go to the fellowshipassociates.org and find him in the previous residence, and there's a place there where you can give to previous residents.
Joel, it's been so good to have you here with us today. Thank you for taking the time to share your story and what God is doing in your life and in your country, your city. Thank you for being a part of that. Would you mind praying for us just over fellowship in Central Arkansas and our partnership with you in Rwanda? And would you mind praying in your native language?
Okay. Thank you. I wonder if you know when to say amen. Mani komeye mutima wongera gushimira datukiranuka izina ryawe rishyirwe hejuru. Ndagushima ku bwa Fellowship Bible Church n'umurimo urimo kubakoresha muri Central Arkansas. Mwami, ndagushimira ukuboko kwawe gukomeye kubatera urukundo rutuma bakora ibyo bakora muri iki gihugu ndetse no hanze. Mwami, izina ryawe rihimbazwe. Mbasabiye umugisha ugukomokaho. Reka Mwami, ubwiza bwawe n'imbaraga zawe zikomeze kubera mu bugingo, gukomeza gusakara mu bugingo bwabo, bahindura ubuzima bw'abandi bantu, babatera kugukunda no kugukurikira mu izina rya Yesu Kristo Umwami wacu. Amen.
Amen.
Until next time, I'm Dan.
And I'm Amy.
For As You Go, this is Fellowship Talks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fellowship Talks. We hope this podcast will help you be a more effective disciple of Jesus Christ as you love God and you love others in your daily context. Fellowship Bible Church exists to make disciples who live by God's grace and for His glory at home and across the world.